10.
Okay.
Did you hear her voice as well then? Tell us that it's...
I did, yeah. And I had to say, got it.
Okay, it's always weird for me. About halfway through, my mind will go, I did click record, didn't I? Because it'd be horrible to have to try and do it again. Hi there, everyone, and welcome back to another Habitat podcast, where we're thinking about spiritual practices that shape our lives and shape us to be more like Jesus. Sometimes some of those practices have sounded very spiritual or kind of, you know, different. Other times there are other habits which, when we direct them towards God, become a spiritual thing. So I know a whole bunch of people who read, but I know, having talked to Linda over the years, that reading has become a real spiritual habit for her. So I thought it'd be great today just to share with Lynn. So Lynn, thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a great honor to be here. I can't quite believe it, but there we go. Who knows where we find ourselves?
Yeah, and where we go, absolutely. When you and I talk, Lynn, who knows where we go? before we hit record, I was just commenting on, for those watching the visual version of this and not the audio, on Linda's sort of background, that beautiful mirror behind you, and the way it must be the artist's eye. You've set up your camera sort of symmetrically there. It's, goodness knows what's going on in my office behind me. So Lind, reading for you has become a real source of learning and inspiration and encounter. But perhaps before we get into what you've been reading sort of recently, where do you think that started? Have you always been a reader?
I was read to when I was a child. My sister particularly used to read stories to me. But I can't say I enjoyed reading as a child. But just before COVID, I was struggling. I was experiencing a lot of chronic pain, and went to the library, probably for some recycling bags. And there was a book that was positioned on the entrance. And it was entitled Manage Your Chronic Pain and Things, and Understanding It a Bit Better. Wow. And I thought, that sounds good. So I picked it up and took it out of the library. And what I read in that book made me understand a bit more about my situation with pain. Mm. And following that, I ended up being... recommended to go on to a chronic pain management program, which was pretty intense. But what was good with it, you had to meet every week for 3 hours, so it was intense for 10 weeks, and it's all scientifically led. All the evidence is scientific. You had a physiotherapist, a pain consultant, and a psychotherapist there. Wow. And they helped you understand how with pain it's different, and the fact that with chronic pain or persistent pain, sometimes it's our own body that's trying to protect itself from hurt and from further hurt, and how that impacts on us physically and mentally and the whole being of us. So I benefited hugely on that program, so much so that I now don't need any pain meds to manage my condition. I'm doing it with more control from myself, but actually, as we would talk more, that the fact is that I've allowed God to enter in and heal me and to ingratiate me, because I've opened up to a different way. And so that was the start of the reading. We had to read a lot to understand pain. And then we had COVID, And obviously you don't, you know, what do you do in COVID? So I read, I learned to crochet, because what do you do? A big source of my books at that time were charity shops. But even within the charity shops, you find some really interesting literature. And then more latterly, I've sort of discovered some other books, and certainly coming into Bethel with the book club, reading books, and some of those books were challenging. It's been an escalation, but an escalation done on such a personal level. I wasn't a reader.
I was going to say, with the book that you just stumbled across in the library, and the timing of that, you know, it's too big, isn't it, to be a coincidence. But I loved what you were saying about sometimes you need to look at something differently, and sometimes a book or something that someone's written, for me, poetry as well, it can really give you a new way of looking at something. And break you out of an old habit of thinking about something, I think for me that's a big thing that the books help with, is just that fresh approach.
One of the books I did come across, it's actually called The Art of Rest, and it was by a Radio 4 presenter, Claudia Hammond, and in it, it's really interesting, because it's again based on some research done in 2016, where they looked at rest and how people rest, and the diversity of how different people rest, how we find, you know, doing nothing is really hard.
Yes.
And in fact, the number one thing in that whole test that came out was reading. That people find they can rest and focus, but there was other ones with mindfulness.
Yeah.
And I've been interested in that, but mindfulness alone isn't enough, because it can allow me to channel my thoughts in a specific way, but it doesn't open my eyes and my other senses, well, not for me anyway, to fully immerse in it.
And I think that's interesting, those two books that you've mentioned. Neither of them were written by a Christian or have a Christian theme, and yet you can see overlap sometimes with some things that science or psychology are discovering that's been in the Bible for years and years and years. I find reading personally very restful. I know not everyone does, not everyone is a reader or learns that way, or engages that way. But for me, it's kind of like the Japanese concept of flow, that you need to find something that engages you enough so you're not bored. And there is a little bit of a challenge in to keep you kind of connected, but it's not overtaxing that feels like work. You know, I love their phrase, if you find the right job, you'll never work a day of your life. Because if you can find something that you flow in. And for me, I can often feel in the flow when I'm reading.
Yeah, definitely. You quickly know when you pick up a book whether or not you're going to love it, hate it, or really struggle. And I think even when one of the books you read with a Dallas Willard one, with Divine Conspiracy, it was challenging. But when you actually got into his rhythm and in tune with how, you know, his insight was, it was, oh my gosh, I had never seen that before, I just thought, I was so excited at the end of that book, I wanted to read the second book. So all of a sudden you thought, actually, I was moaning and saying, yeah, that was challenging, but I want to know more. So there must have been something that came out of that book that was very fulfilling.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right. And for me, what's been interesting is sometimes there've been books that other people have raved about. That I'm often late to the party. I'm not one to jump on a trend. It's shocking. So it takes about four or five recommendations for me to watch something or read something. And so I'm often late to late to things. But sometimes you start to read something and you get that sense, like you're saying, I don't know if I'm going to connect with this author or whatever it is. But then what's been interesting for me over the years is that in a different season, I've picked up the same book and I've devoured it. And you just think, what's happening there? Because the book clearly can't change, but the book is the same. And yet something happens to us when we do engage with it. There's a friend of mine who loves to get the audio version of a book and read it at the same time, because that helps them to stay connected both with the audio and with the. And so with one or two things, I've done that, and it is, yeah, incredibly helpful to hear, especially if it's the person who wrote it, to hear their voice and their accent and their intonation and emphasis, which could be entirely different to what we're putting on it, of course.
Yeah, I think certainly, as you say, when you engage other senses, you're allowing yourself to really be immersed in that experience. And yeah, I think I've listened to some audiobooks and photos. Sometimes when I start listening to the audiobooks, though, it makes me feel sleepy and I want to go to sleep. Because it's so soothing. But then that's okay. I can go back to the last chapter or whatever. But no, reading's really can really come alongside without me forcing it. It's as you say, it's because I like to try and understand. I think one of the things that one of the little nuggets I took out of one of the books, there must be more than this. And I think when I'm looking at a subject, whether it's spirituality, whether it's pain, whether whatever it is, I want to really unpick it, and so then put it back together in a way that I really understand it, because just being told, well, if you do this, this will be better for you. No, I know. Well, why will that be better for me? And how will it be better for me? And for how long will it be better for me? Because there's no point in doing it for a moment. I want it to be longer lasting.
And I've always appreciated that, Linda, as we've talked together, that hunger to know. So tell us a bit about the books that have really sort of spoken to you. You mentioned the Dallas Willard ones. What other ones have really blessed you?
Well, I was very grateful for reading the second Dallas Willard because it compounded and really put the meat onto what the first book had done. So that was really good. But just like, well, we've just completed Every Breath We Take, and I know that that the first thought is to sing a Sting song, but it's actually it that was a exciting time because I've looked at breathing with the pain bit. I've looked I One of the guys that I've read a lot of, he's not a I don't know if he's a Christian or not. Lorimer Moseley, he's this great influencer with the pain revolution. But it's endorsing the fact that we are a whole being and we are not standalone, that we need to be connected to allow our bodies to be in the right place and the right position to receive the help that we are so seeking, whether it's for pain or spirituality. You just reading a book isn't going to help you with that. You need to experience it. You need to practice it because it's no point just doing it for a day and then moving on. It has to become part of you for you to become part of it. So I really did it. It resonated with me that book, because by Terry Wardle, and it was amazing, the podcast, listening to him, because again, I'm thinking, now I've heard you, you sound just like your book. And the wealth of experience that gentleman's got, you can't just get that in one sitting. That is a lifetime of experience, of suffering, of rebirth, based on his life. And I've really liked that, but it's got me on to say I've had a question when I was talking to my husband, trying to describe what the soul is. And it's really hard. I've been reading now Soul Keeping with from John Ortberg. And again, though, that just follows on from the Terry Wardle books, from the Dallas Willard books. And I'm thinking, well, this was meant to happen now. It's blowing my mind, because in reading these books, it's opening more doors in my mind, which is allowing more to come in. And I'm receiving much, much more than I was.
And it's incredibly humbling, isn't it, when you look back and realize, so God wanted me to read this to get that, and then without any desire or involvement or manipulation on my part, then he brought this book along, and then I got this, and then he led me to that. It's massively humbling to see that, the work of God and the plan of God. It's a beautiful thing.
It's as you say, it is a masterpiece, because I would never have thought of doing it that way. But it's just so gentle. It's so really coming alongside, holding my hand, helping me to trust more and say, no, I'm not going down the wrong rabbit hole. I'm with you. You're with me. We're okay. Just like when I was a kid, my dad would hold me tight and just reassure me. I just have this overwhelming feeling that this is the right order.
For me. Yeah, that's incredible. I was just going to say I love what you were saying earlier about the fact that we are body, mind, and spirit and soul. And sometimes we think that this is when I'm being spiritual, or this is when I'm doing spiritual things. But actually, there's a unity to all of those things. And so that you can, in some strange and often mysterious ways, experience something of God leading you to a book about pain management in a library that, you probably wouldn't find that in a Christian bookshop, for no other reason than it's not a Christian book. It's certainly not anti-Christian, but God is concerned about all of those things and brings all those things together.
Reminds me, because he loves us, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And he absolutely loves us. He doesn't want us to experience this life other than it being fulfilling. And if you've got that blockage between your mind and your body, and therefore your spirit, then that flow, that channel, isn't gonna be open to receive.
Yeah. And sometimes when you're reading, there are these moments of huge discovery, you know, when you sort of have to put the book down and go, I wish somebody had told me that years ago. And other times you are just led back to familiar waters, but there's a freshness to it. And that whole thing about God wanting us to, you know life to the full, the absolute maximum of what life is about with him, and you know, breathing him in on all those kind of things, means that if we trust him, sometimes he will lead us to something, like you were saying with the audiobook. And you might fall asleep and feel incredibly guilty about that. But perhaps God knew that's what you needed most was to sleep, just to rest and, you know, stop looking for big revelation and just sort of rest.
And as you say, rest can be found in lots of different ways, but you have to be willing and allow yourself to rest. That okay, yeah, I might have wanted to read that book or listen to that book, but no, at that point in time, I needed to go to sleep. So allow yourself. It's weird, but I know I when I think I sort of say, you know, I'm allowing God to connect with me. And I think, hang on, that word, allow, I'm allowing this, the creator of the universe, you know, what, giving him permission. And yet, that's what we have to do. He's forever present, but we have to be receptive, and we have to acknowledge, not just know it, you have to experience it. Otherwise, you're going to miss the excitement.
And sometimes knowing can get in the way of that. You know, oh, I know that, or yeah, I need to look into that more. That knowledge alone can sometimes be a huge barrier. I remember hearing a Messianic Jew, so someone from a Jewish background has become a Christian, talking about this word faith in the gospel context. And he said that in the original language, you could almost translate it rather than those times when it says, and Jesus could see their faith, or there was faith for healing. You could almost translate it as permission. And that just blew my mind in terms of what faith is, you know, that there is an aspect of faith, of course, that is knowledge, you know, to know God and to know about him, but also that it's just got to go hand in hand with the permission, the allowing. It's faith and trusting, isn't it? It's faith and doing.
It's one of the big things, going back to the pain stuff. Acceptance is the first step often. Acknowledge it. It's like when you practicing a meditation or anything in those ways, you'll have other background noises, and that's okay. You know, acknowledge them, but don't give it the permission to disrupt what your focus is. Because actually, why am I doing what I'm doing? I'm doing it because I want to connect with God. Well, don't allow the distractions, which are there purposefully to take you away. Just go, I know you're there, and that's okay, but I'm going to keep you there. And so otherwise, often we're quick to react. You know, even in church, you hear a noise at the background. I bet you a load of people look behind them, and they won't be looking at you in the sermon, and they've missed whatever it was you were saying then. We're easily distracted.
I was talking to Rosa Hunt, the principal of the Baptist College, a couple of weeks ago, and she loves reading some really early Christian literature, like the Desert Fathers and those guys. And there was this monk who had a younger monk come to him and say he was struggling with meditation. And this Desert Father says, oh, what were you struggling with? And he said, oh, he named a number, let's just say he said 20 times. 20 times when I'm meditating, I get distracted by the thoughts. And the Desert Father went, oh, praise God, that's 20 opportunities to turn to Jesus. And it was like, sometimes we beat ourselves up over this stuff, you know, but just accepting I am human, You know, I have got a lot going on. I'm a busy person in a busy world, but using those as opportunities to turn to Jesus, and accepting that that's part and parcel. You know, we don't get to be spiritual and then get to be practical and then get to be whatever it is. It's all one. It's all one thing.
That's what out of say the books I've been reading more recently is it's making sense that we are a whole. We wouldn't we've never been isolated. That there is this connection, but we have to be in the right place. And a lot of things that when you start becoming more aware of yourself and your world around you can equip you as well. I mean, one of the things that I'm very conscious of, I negativity in the world is I'm good at feeding off that, and I think we all are to a certain extent. But acknowledging that negativity and having the strength from receiving the guidance and the reassurance from God is very, very helpful. And it actually takes away a lot of the guilt that you might feel from, not doing something or, oh, but yeah, we always say, like, God is ever present, never leaves us. But we've got to be looking at him, and we've got to be receiving him, and we're acknowledging him.
I remember years and years ago now, a long time back, reading an article about the dangers of the sort of the positive thinking movement. And this one woman was just expressing there were some things that she found helpful about it, but she'd been recently diagnosed with cancer, and was expected not to moan about it, but just be brave and say it was life affirming and all the rest of it, when she was just, you know, raw and hurting. And I think sometimes, in an effort not to be negative, we can just be in denial, you know, of things. And perhaps acceptance is a habit that we need to learn, you know, that whole thing about, you know, this is there's that prayer, isn't there? The serenity prayer. You know, give me the wisdom to recognize what I can and can't change, you know. It's powerful stuff.
There's freedom in that, I think, as well, because you can let it go and just hand it over and move on, because that's the important thing, that we don't stay in the past, we don't hang on to that baggage. But we do need to acknowledge it, and we do need to accept that it happened for us to able to be now and then move on and live a fulfilled life.
Yeah, definitely. One thing I wanted to pick up on, because we could talk all day, as we know, but you mentioned about book club and the habit of reading with others and then sharing with others. How has that sort of been helped to you?
I've been known to say that it's my therapy session. It's what's been it's it is it's very much like a small group, in as much as you get to know people on another level. People that you thought you knew, but you didn't know to that level, to that extent. And there's a real grace in reading a book to that extent, within a small group, because it opens doors that, or windows in yourself that you didn't even realize were going to be opened. And there's been some really wonderful sharing moments from people in the group that I'm sure they've been blessed by it. I certainly have been. And I look forward to book club. I look forward to meeting the people. And we have a WhatsApp group, which again whether it's collective or individually, you can message people and come alongside and help everyone, each and every one of us, know that what they're experiencing, you've experienced, and what, and did you know about this? And it's again looking at a book which the content, well, it might be very, very familiar. For example, the Christmas story.
Yeah.
It's a very familiar story.
Yeah.
The Easter story is a very familiar one. But then you take it apart and you analyze it and you see it from a different point of view. And all of a sudden it takes on a whole new meaning.
Yes.
And much more, yeah, much more meaningful. And people have experienced something that they weren't expecting.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And the, like you say, the joy of sharing that, you know, with others. It's I think it's C.S. Lewis, when he's writing about worship, that was asking the question about why we worship. And he came up with this brilliant thing that our experience of something isn't kind of complete until we've shared it. And so if you see something beautiful or stunning, you instinctively want to tell somebody, because it's weird not to. And if you get to tell the person who made it, I mean, that's 10 times better. And so that was like his sort of thinking about worship, that we're moved to worship because we long to reach out to our creator. But I think the first part is equally true as well, that our experience of something, as personal and individual as and powerful as it can be, is somehow amplified when we share it with others.
Yeah, and ultimately, isn't that what the Gospels were? You know, the people who lived with Jesus experienced what Jesus did, had to go and tell people because they couldn't keep it to themselves. Because why would you? It's a hot potato.
Yeah.
And that again, through the books that, you know, you can be drawn to, and you know that will be different for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of it, you want to share that and say, oh, the good bit. Did you get that bit? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Like even the Dallas Willard, the fact that I've discovered the kingdom and how it exists and it's everywhere and it's there, and it's part of us all. Whoa, that really blew my mind.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. The
well, you've got to be careful how you tell people.
Well, I may well name this episode "The Gospel is a Hot Potato," because I think that's just a beautiful that's just a beautiful phrase, great image. Lynn, it's been so great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Great to see you.
Thank you.